Thank you very much, Rabbi Weissman. It's a real honor to be here to speak with my colleague, Rabbi Rapp, as well. My name is Yona Reese. I am currently the Abbatin, the Chief Rabbinical Judge of the Chicago Rabbinical Council. I am a Chaver Betin, a member of the Rabbinical Court of the Betin of America as well, where I previously served as Director. And as Rabbi Weissman mentioned, I'm also a Rosh Yeshiva here at Yeshiva University at Rabbi Yitzchak Elkanan Theological Seminary. Over the years, I've been working in Betin for over 20 years now, and one of the more interesting types of cases that sometimes gets filed in the Betin is a defamation action, where parties will come to the Betin, somebody will want to bring a Din Torah, a Betin proceeding against another party for having besmirched their name, what we might call defamation, slander according to secular law. And the question is, how does Betin in the contemporary age deal with defamation suits? What type of relief is available? To what degree does Betin even hear these types of cases? Somebody says, this individual is besmirching my good name, my family's good name in the community. They're accusing me of various acts, or they're claiming that I am a stupid person, they're claiming that I am an arrogant person, they're claiming that I am a greedy person, they're claiming that I am an uncouth person, and therefore my name and my reputation, my goodwill is somehow becoming diminished. How does halacha deal with these types of actions? It's interesting, in Israel, there's actually a law on the books, an official statute on the books, which is called Chok Isser Lashon Hara, which is the statute of the prohibition against speaking defamatory speech. And it's based on the Torah prohibition against defamatory speech that we're familiar with. It's a verse in Vayikra, Lo Seilech Rachil Be'amecha. You're not allowed to go about as a talebearer against your people. We know that the Chafetz Chaim, Rabbi Yisrael Meir Kagan, author of the Mishnah Berurah, but perhaps even more famously, the author of the Chafetz Chaim, wrote his famous treatise, for which he got his name, about the laws of defamatory speech, speaking about the three different categories of prohibited defamatory speech in Jewish law. One is Rechivas, which is derived from this verse that we just quoted, Lo Selech Rachil Be'amecha, to walk around saying, oh, so-and-so has said this, and so-and-so did this, so-and-so said this about you, just being the person who kind of spreads gossip from one place to another. And then there's the prohibition against Lashon Hara, speaking derogatory speech about another individual, even if it is true. Truth is not a defense as far as the violation of Lashon Hara, defamatory speech, is concerned from the perspective of the Jewish tradition. And then finally, there is what you might call the worst type of offense, which is the outright slander, motzi shemra, where one is speaking not only derogatory speech, but also derogatory speech that happens to be false in nature. And all of these different types of speech are prohibited in the Jewish tradition, with one exception that is discussed at great length by the Chafetz Chaim, and that is if it is litoelis. If the speech is in order to prevent a harm, like, for example, you know that Reuven is about to enter into a business partnership with Shimon, and you know from first-hand experience that Shimon is a crook. So then it becomes permissible, and even in many cases obligatory, to tell Reuven about how Shimon is a crook, because you have to rescue Reuven from being in a disastrous and catastrophic business type of a partnership that's going to cause Reuven loss. And that is, in fact, the second half of the verse that we just quoted from Vayikra. The first half is Lo Selech Rachil Be'amecha. The second half is Lo Samod Al Adam Re'echa. You can't stand idly by when your neighbor's blood is being shed. Here, Reuven's blood is going to be shed, his monetary blood, so to speak, is going to be shed if he enters into this partnership, and therefore you have to rescue him. But there are at least seven conditions that the Chafetz Chaim rattles off that need to be satisfied in order to properly convey that negative speech. One of them is that in the first instance, if the warning can be conveyed without having to relay anything negative about Shimon, then it should be done in that fashion. Secondly, it should not be exaggerated above the point in which Shimon really is a crook. Shouldn't say, oh, Shimon is a crook and he's also an adulterer and he's also a murderer for good measure, if really all that he is a crook. And also, it can't be done for selfish or ulterior motives. It can't be that the person who is sharing this derogatory speech really has a vendetta against Shimon and therefore is doing it because he hates Shimon's guts, as opposed to doing it because he simply wants to rescue Reuben from harm. And also the purpose of embarrassing Shimon unnecessarily in the process. So very often when people speak derogatory speech, they do not satisfy all of the conditions of the Chafetz Chaim, and very often people are simply interested in gossip, mongering, just making a lot of noise for no productive purpose whatsoever. So, clearly, this type of derogatory speech is prohibited according to Jewish law. Does Jewish law allow for the types of exceptions that civil law is tolerant about? There was a case where, the famous case, New York Times versus Sullivan from the 1960s, where a person, a police commissioner in Montgomery, Alabama, brought suit against the New York Times because they had posted some sort of an advertisement for a civil rights movement about certain improper actions that had been taken by the police, supposedly in Alabama, to suppress the civil rights movement. And some of the allegations that were made in this ad were false in nature and defamatory, and therefore Sullivan brought this action against the New York Times. In the lower court, he won. He won the tort relief for defamatory speech, but the case eventually made its way to the New York Times, and the New York Times said that you have to allow a certain amount of leeway when you're dealing with speech against elected officials or people who might be up for election, because people have a right to know what types of concerns are out there regarding elected officials and the like. And therefore, there is no ability to recover an action for defamation unless there is actual malice, unless the person who published the defamatory speech was aware of its falsehood or published it with reckless disregard of the truth or falsehood of what was being published. And the actual malice standard is a pretty high threshold in order to meet to win a defamation action. The holding in Sullivan, a later case called Curtis versus Butts, was extended to any type of public figure where there has to be something close at least to an actual malice type of standard which is met in order to win relief for defamation. On the other hand, as far as the prohibition against defamation is concerned, from a Jewish law perspective, we know that it applies even when the speech in question is 100% truthful in nature, and it also applies whenever the speech is intended to embarrass, whenever it is excessive. So even if there is some sort of a productive type of nature to it, it still might fall within the prohibition. There was a recent dispute between two rabbinical authorities in Israel, Rabbi Meir Barali and Rabbi Yaakov Epstein, regarding whether if somebody becomes an elected official in Israel, what we call Nivcharei HaTzibur, there is an implied waiver in order for to allow defamation to be spoken against the individual. If I choose to become Prime Minister of Israel, so it's understood that I am creating an allowance for people to speak Lashon Hara against me. If they're not going to speak Lashon Hara against the Prime Minister of Israel, what are they going to be able to talk about at the Shabbos table? So therefore, it's sort of understood that there's an implied waiver if I'm going to run for elected office. That is the argument that Rabbi Meir Barali made, and he said, because ultimately it is l'toelis, there is a constructive purpose to it, so that people can express themselves freely and in an uninhibited fashion regarding their concerns about the behavior of public officials. If this will be published in the newspaper, as long as it wasn't being done with malice, it was being done b'tum leiv, like the statute in Israel says, it was being done where the intention to really bring out the truth, even if maybe it's not investigated as thoroughly as it should have been investigated. So then we're not going to hold anybody liable. And it says there wouldn't even be a violation of Lashon Hara because there's a waiver. But Yaakov Epstein, on the other hand, came along and disagreed vehemently with Rabbi Meir Bar-Ali and said that's not really how Jewish law works. Number one, according to Jewish law, you can't necessarily waive a person's derogatory speech against you. In fact, there are opinions, including Rabbi Yosef Dov Soloveitchik of blessed memory, who said that a person's reputation is not in their possession. A person's reputation is part of their Tzelem Elokim, they're being created in the image of God. Rabbi Menashe Klein writes the same thing. And it is a part of everyone's imperative, V'yisem Nikiyem Me'ashem U'Me'Yisrael, that you should be free of any type of aspersions in the eyes of God or man, that you are supposed to protect your reputation. You have no right to waive your reputation according to Jewish law. And Rabbi Yisrael Issalayim, the author of the Truma Sedeshin, writes that at the very least, a person is not allowed to waive being embarrassed by somebody, because for a human being created in the image of God to be embarrassed, so that is an offense against God himself. It's not something which we have the ability to waive. Secondly, he notes that even if there would be some type of a license that a person would have the ability to give, the person who would be speaking the Lashon Hara, the derogatory speech, would have to themselves make sure that they are complying with all of the conditions of the Chafetz Chaim. And generally speaking, he says, in the media, in the social networking, in the newspapers, there's an agenda. There's an agenda to promote a particular political party. There's an agenda to disparage a particular political party or position. So whenever there's an agenda involved, that automatically is a violation of the prohibition of derogatory speech. The Gemara, the Talmud, says that whenever derogatory speech is spoken, it murders three different individuals: the speaker, the listener, and the individual that is spoken about. So even if the individual who is spoken about decides that they're going to give a waiver, even assuming that a waiver could work, which is debatable, they can't waive the offense that's being committed by the speaker and the offense that's being committed by the listener who is accepting this derogatory speech that may not necessarily have been carefully researched and may not necessarily be true. Only in a very, very slim minority of cases are all the conditions of the Chafetz Chaim going to be satisfied in instances of derogatory speech in the media, and therefore it would appear to still be problematic. Now, the cases that come in front of the Beis Din might be cases brought by public figures. There might also be cases brought by private figures. But one thing that we have to also recognize as a matter of Jewish law is that there's a second prong. The first prong is the derogatory speech prohibited? Most of the time, it's probably going to be prohibited. But there's a second prong, which is, are you entitled to monetary relief? There's one thing, which is the prohibition itself, and certainly we're told that there's a punishment from God if you embarrass a person in public, and so hamavnis pnei chavero barabim. So the Talmud says such an individual loses their place in the world to come. Such an individual is one of the people who descends to Gehinnom, descends to this place known as hell, and they never rise up from hell. That's a pretty bad punishment, but that's not a punishment that's meted down by the earthly court. That's a punishment that's meted out by the heavenly court. So the question is, what type of punishment is available, what redress is available from the hands of the earthly court? So the Gemara in Baba Kama, the Talmud says in Baba Kama, Daf Tzadi Aleph, that when it comes to Bishu B'Dvarim, when it comes to embarrassment which is only through speech alone, that means speech which is verbalized, and the same thing would apply to speech in writing. So Gemara in Sanhedrin, that talks about how a Beis Din, when it issues its ruling, actually has to be careful about derogatory speech. If they didn't reach a unanimous verdict, they're not supposed to say which of the judges were in the majority and which judges were in the minority, because if they do so then that would cast aspersions on the judges. If the person, one person doesn't like the decision, so then they'll say, oh, so now I know which two judges to be angry at and which judge I shouldn't be angry at. So therefore, that's not really the way in which the decision is supposed to be handed out. We see that we have to be worried about derogatory speech and connotations, even in writing and not only in speech. But whenever you have this type of derogatory speech, which is only speech or in writing, as opposed to the embarrassment that you would bring upon somebody if you punch them in the face and they're bleeding all over the place, and it's kind of like embarrassing, like bleeding in public, whatever. It's an embarrassing thing to be hit in the head or to be wounded. So then you have to pay for that type of embarrassment. That's called boshes haguf. But if there's no harm to the person's body, says the Gemara, it's just boshes devarim, so then that is not recoverable. There are no monetary damages. So a person can come to the Beis Din and they can say, this person is besmirching my name in public and private, whether the person's a public figure, private figure, whatever it is. But at the end of the day, it appears that there is no recovery for monetary damages according to Jewish law. So what do you do? Is there ever any type of basis to award monetary damages? It's interesting that the Rosh, Rabbeinu Asher, early authority, writes in the name of Rav Shrira Gaon, one of the Gaonim, that there was a takana, there was a special rabbinic enactment that was made that would not award monetary damages in this case, but would place a person in excommunication, in nidoy. So the person who committed the defamation would be placed in excommunication. They would remain in excommunication until such time as they would appease the aggrieved party. How would they appease the aggrieved party? Presumably, they would offer a sum of money. So they would have to offer an appropriate sum of money in order for the excommunication ban of the Betin of the rabbinical court to be removed. And that was how they kind of got out of this problem. Betin was not given the authority to issue a monetary award unless it was boshes haguf against a person had been wounded in their body, and they would be entitled to other types of relief too, like medical bills, but they're also entitled to relief for their embarrassment based on the standing of the person who caused the embarrassment and the person who was embarrassed. I call it the amibayish from misbayish. But in the case where there was no bodily wound, so then the Betin could only excommunicate the offender until the offender had appeased the wound, the aggrieved party against whom he or she had committed the defamation. So this all works during a time in which we would put people in chayrim, in which we would actually excommunicate people. But it's not really the practice so much to excommunicate anymore, because it has a very grievous consequences to excommunicate somebody. We don't feel comfortable doing it, and it doesn't always have the desired effect. They excommunicated Spinoza, it didn't really change his opinions or what he did. So therefore, we don't excommunicate so much. So how then can we justify an award? So the Rosh writes elsewhere, and the Rambam writes this as well, in Hilchos Kovil Amazik, the third chapter of Hilchos Kovil Amazik, he says, Yesh lebeis din ligdor b'dabi b'chol makom b'chol zman kemo shiyiru. That Beis Din has the right to do something which is known as Migdor Milsa. What does Migdor Milsa mean? Migdor Milsa means that Beis Din can frame sometimes extrajudicial, extraordinary remedies that are above and beyond that which the law, which Jewish law normally allows, in order to bring about fairness and justice in society. So Beis Din sees that there is terrible injustice through defamation and slander that's taking place. Beis Din can say, we think that it's appropriate for a certain sum of money to be paid, even though it's not strictly required according to Jewish law. But this is very discretionary. It depends upon every single community. It depends upon the time period in which you live. Every single Beis Din has to make this type of discretionary act. If you look in the Shulchan Aruch, these laws are codified almost at the very end of the laws of Choshen Mishpat, of monetary laws in the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Tav Kaf. The Shulchan Aruch brings both possibilities. Either, says the Shulchan Aruch, Beis Din can decide to make special enactments, special penalties like it sees fit. And some say Beis Din should just excommunicate the offender until the offender appeases the offended party. So therefore, what do we do in practice when these cases come in front of our rabbinical court? So if you look at a number of the different authorities that dealt with defamation cases, they were usually defamation cases against people who served as chazonim, people who served as shluchei tzibor. They were the ones most likely to get defamed for some reason. The people who daven for the umma. Most of the time, they were defamed by allegations that they had committed adultery, allegations that they had engaged in sexual improprieties. That was the general nature of the defamation. And there were various cases where the allegations were made without sufficient proof, and where it was found that they had really been defamed, that they had been spoken about improperly. The other type of action that you find is where a person, like a rabbi's wife, would be defamed for similar types of activities. Say, how could you be married to that Nafkat Barat? The Mordecai brings the case. How could you be married to that woman who goes out to the outside marketplace and sells her wares, if you know what I mean? So these are the cases that are described by the rabbinic authorities, and they speak about the different remedies that are available. So the Mordecai says, well, one remedy, and this you find in the Gemara as well, somebody called somebody else a mamzer. So the Gemara says, well, you know what you can do? Assuming they're not really a mamzer, if they are a mamzer, maybe it's good to know they're a mamzer so you won't marry them by mistake because they are illegitimate. But if they're not really a mamzer, so then you give the person malchus. You give the person lashes in such a case. So the Mordecai says, so we can give lashes. The rabbinic authorities are entrusted to give lashes. Sometimes at the Beit Din of America, we really want to administer lashes. But we're not able to, so we have a problem. We don't generally administer lashes. We don't generally excommunicate people. We might issue an order of recalcitrance, not the same thing as excommunication. We don't generally excommunicate people, so really we just have to use our discretion in terms of when it's appropriate, lemigda milsa, in order to award monetary damages. So the framework that has been adopted by the Beit Din is to distinguish between two different types of cases. One is a case of personal slander. The other case is that of professional slander. You look in the Truma Sedeshin, the Tshuva, the response, and he wrote on the subject, Simon Shin Zion. He speaks about really what was a professional slander case. A Shliach Tzibor, a chazan who lost his job because of these unfounded allegations about his personal life that were made about him, and therefore he was removed from his position. So Truma Sedeshin says, when the Talmud says, if you embarrass somebody with words, you can't recover, this extends to Motzi Shema, to all cases of defamation and slander. He says the main reason you can't recover is because of the damage that the person ultimately suffers is one which only comes about indirectly. The grumma. There were words that were spoken. People heard about the words. They decided to act themselves upon the words. That's why you can't generally recover, he explains, based on grumma. The Rosh explains it's exeris hakasav. The Torah says you're only allowed to recover. There's a verse in the Torah that says, Vechazika bim bushav. There was a woman who intervened when her husband was fighting with another man, and she grabbed the other man in his private parts. Vekatzosayas kapal. We figuratively cut off her hand. We don't actually cut off her hand. She has to pay money for the embarrassment that she caused. He says, we see that it has to be physical in nature. So Truma Sedeshin says, whatever the source, we wouldn't normally be able to award damages in this particular case. But he says that because such a terrible thing was done, that this person ended up losing their livelihood as a result of it. So therefore, imratzu abezin v'kansu, this is the source 14, it's carryover paragraph from page 3 of the materials if you want to take a look. If the Beis Din wants to issue a penalty in order to close the mouths of those who would speak a falsehood and cause this terrible damage, then the Beis Din can do according to what they feel is right and appropriate under the circumstances. So just like in the case of the Truma Sedeshin, where he deals with a loss of livelihood, that's what we call professional slander. So the feeling that the Beis Din has is, what is our general jurisdiction? Our general jurisdiction is to hear monetary cases and to issue awards when a person has suffered monetary loss. A person ends up losing their livelihood because of the slander. That's monetary loss that falls more squarely within the jurisdiction of our Bezdin, like the case of the Trumas Hadeshin, we will hear and entertain such a case, and if we find that it's appropriate, that there's real defamation, so then we will issue an award. But if it's personal slander, that you just have somebody who's walking around the community saying, this person is a really bad chazan, you know, they just don't know how to carry a tune properly, their nusach is really terrible, or this person is like really arrogant and you shouldn't have anything to do with them, but it's not professional slander, slander per se. They're not looking for the person to lose their job. They're just, you know, complaining about another baal habos, not necessarily somebody who has a paid position in the synagogue. So then our general approach is, that's what rabbis are for. They also are hired, they have a salary, they have a job to do. Let the local rabbi deal with the internal squabbles within their own synagogue. This is not a monetary claim per se. This is something which can be patched up by the rabbinic authorities. In fact, that's consistent with a Maharshal of Shlomo Luria. It says that if it is possible for the community itself to bring an end to these types of disputes, so he says that really is the best way to go about it. In Yaakov, this is the Yamshel Shlomo Baba Kama Perekes Simon Mem Aleph of Am Yaakov Atzibol Ashkida Dover Ashrayim. If the community itself is able to quell a dispute, fortunate are they. So we want our communities to be fortunate, so we say, be fortunate, quell a dispute yourselves, don't bring the cases of personal slander to us. That has been the general approach of the Beit Din. So sometimes the people will ask the question of the Beit Din, they'll say, oh, so you're not prepared to issue a ruling in a personal slander case, but you know what? There are defamation statutes out there in the civil law, so can you just authorize me to go to the civil courts and I will pursue my claim over there? Can I get a heter al kos? Can I get permission to go to the civil court? So it's very interesting. Rabbein, there was a takana. There was an enactment by Rabbeinu Gershom. We know Rabbeinu Gershom, he made the laws, you can't marry more than one woman and so forth. So Rabbeinu Gershom also issued other rabbinic enactments. One of them was that in a case where, let's say, one Reuven punches Shimon, Shimon suffers all kinds of damage. So nowadays, Bezdin only awards money for the damages that are out of pocket, that the medical bills, things of that variety, but not for the embarrassment that was suffered by having been punched by Reuven. So the says Rabbeinu Gershom, since Bezdin nowadays doesn't issue monetary awards, even for boshes aguf, even for the embarrassment that they are entitled to issue relief for, because Bezdin only deals with cases of chisar and kisk, where there's a loss of money, like the Gemara says, in terms of Bezdin's jurisdiction nowadays. So therefore, says Rabbeinu Gershom, Bezdin should just authorize the afflicted party to pursue their boshes claim, their claim for embarrassment in the civil courts, and that's perfectly permissible. So couldn't we do the same thing? So the answer is no, because there's a big difference. In that case, really, Reuven is entitled to recovery according to Jewish law. However, in a case where they haven't been punched in their body, and it's only a slander through words, and Betin comes to the conclusion that there's no basis, even based on siyag b'takani, even based on extraordinary, extrajudicial remedies, Bezdin concludes that this does not rise to the level of monetary relief, so then Bezdin has no basis to issue a heter al kos, to issue a permission for Reuven to go and pursue his claim against Shimon in the civil court for slander and defamation under these circumstances. So that's the way that Bezdin responded to the request that somebody brought along those lines. But let's say that you have a community that says, we would love to be able to resolve this matter, but we're just not capable of it. The rabbi turns to us and says, I want to refer this case of personal slander to the Beit Din. So if the communal leaders say to the Beit Din, we need you, Beit Din, because otherwise we're not going to be able to take care of it on our own, and it's clear to the Beit Din this is what the community wants, so then the Beit Din will deal with those cases itself. So what is the discretion that the Beit Din has if it's not going to issue a monetary award? So some of the rabbinic authorities
talk about how there are other types of relief that the Beit Din is able to issue. The Maharshal talks about this as well. The Maharshal says that there's the possibility of being mivakesh slicha, that you can ask for a public apology to be issued. Rav Yair Bachrach LeChavos Yair writes the same thing in Siman Samach Hei as well, that this is also one of the possible remedies, that you can require there to be a public apology which is issued. I remember we had one case a number of years ago where there were two people in a particular congregation who were really at loggerheads with each other. It was breaking up the entire congregation. It was just destroying all peace and harmony. It was like people wanted to come and daven, you know, on a Shabbos morning, and a hockey game would break out. It was just terrible. And the shul came to us, can you please resolve the matter? We heard all of the claims of both parties. One person had gotten up in public and had spoken out against the other party that this individual is terrible because they didn't invite them to their wedding, something along those lines. And the other party said, oh, but I thought they understood why I didn't invite them to their wedding. It's all a giant misunderstanding. So we had them write a, changing the facts only slightly to protect the innocent. So we had the parties assign a joint letter together in which they both issued mutual apologies about the statements and recriminations that they made against each other and explained it was all a giant misunderstanding. They really all love each other. They love each other. They love the show. We all love each other. Everybody loves the show. We're all in love with each other. And they put it up in the bulletin board of the show for 2 weeks. And afterwards, it was Shalom HaYisrael. Everybody was able to proceed in an atmosphere of peace and harmony and goodwill reigned amongst men and women. So that certainly is a possible approach when the Beit Din does have to hear this type of a case. So bottom line is that on one level, when it comes to defamation cases, there is a stringency in Jewish law above and beyond secular law, in that there are more cases where the act of defamation is forbidden, even when dealing with public figures and the like. But on the other hand, when it comes to issuing relief, Jewish law is actually more lenient on some level, in the sense that generally, if it's only an act of slander or defamation, in most cases, you're not going to be entitled to Jewish relief if there wasn't a physical wound that was inflicted from one party upon another party. The way in which Beit Din deals with these cases, based on the approach of the rabbinic authorities through the ages, is either by placing an individual who committed defamation and excommunication until they appease the other party, which could be through money, or by using its extrajudicial powers when the situation requires it in order to impose certain penalties, even monetary penalties, for certain types of actions. The way the Beit Din of America deals with it is by hearing cases of professional slander where ultimately there could be monetary damage and monetary loss, and issuing monetary awards in those cases when appropriate, but generally rejecting cases of personal slander, leaving those cases to the responsibility and expertise of the communal leaders. But when necessary, the Beit Din, at the request of the community, will also intervene when it comes to personal slander matters, in which case the relief, is more likely to be mutual apologies and clarifications of misunderstandings than actual monetary relief. But ultimately, as we know, the main function of Beit Din is emes mishpat shalom shiftu b'shareichem, to bring about truth, but also to bring about judgments of peace throughout all of our communities. And therefore, this is something that we all try to do to the best of our ability. And we hope that we will be successful in terms of our implementation of a Jewish law to produce the greatest amount of harmony amongst all of our people. Thank you very much.